Hey folks, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. It's so great when you get a chance to come and play with me a little bit. I am joined today by Adam Epstein. He is a Tony Award-winning retired Broadway producer whose second act includes a master's in American Studies from Brown, where I taught for a little while, and a year of primetime punditry as the lone non-conservative panelist in a sea of pre-MAGA commentators on Fox News. That must have been fun for him. Adam's disillusion with both political parties led to the creation of Dirty Moderate with Adam Epstein, a politically moderate podcast for lovers of democracy seeking shelter, if you will, from polarization and autocracy. Adam and I get into an array of topics, very freewheeling conversation, which I know you're going to enjoy coming up right here on the Michael Steele podcast next. Hey everybody, what up? Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. So, you know, every once in a while I like to mix up the game. So I figured, let's get a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer, political activist, guru, smart guy to come on and sort of talk politics. And that's who we got. That's who we got. I'm so excited to welcome Adam Epstein to the podcast. Welcome, man.
Michael, this is a, as I said to you earlier, it's a long held dream to be here. Really.
You're a good brother for saying that. I appreciate you. Look, man, you and I, you know, are cut out of similar cloths and have had, you know, very interesting journeys. You sort of played more on the entertainment theater side. I sort of dabbled at that and sort of dove into the politics. I wanted, you know, before we get into sort of the meat and potatoes of a conversation, give me your top line assessment of here we are 6 months out from electing the next president of the United States. On the one side, you have an 80-year-old gentleman currently serving as president, who many of his own party seem to have an issue with his age and are just sort of wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth. And people are complaining about prices that have come way down from where they were a year ago, but nonetheless. And then on the other side, you have a guy who very simply looks at the camera and goes, "I'm your retribution. I want to be a dictator. Elect me." How are you assessing the moment when we're looking at polling showing these two men are tied?
Well, boy, that's actually a great question. So on my own podcast, Dirty Moderate, I talk to people from everywhere. Okay. I do that not to have combat. You know, I spent a year on Fox News, so I don't need to be in combat all the time. Okay. So, but I do bring on people who are inclined to frame policy debates as policy debates. And here's what I mean by that we are in 2012 or we are in 1996, you know, it's Clinton versus Dole or something. And I'm not the first person to say it's almost quaint thinking. It wouldn't be nice to just argue over taxes and, you know, and again, having, you know, become an independent for a while, I was raised a Democrat. I am sympathetic to many center-right positions, admittedly. But the thing I say to them is, I can't believe that you won't take this guy at his word when he says what he's going to, when he says what he says, but also when he literally says all of that. But you know what? I can be a dictator if I want to be. The rules don't apply to me. We've lived through, okay, that's the other thing. We lived through the 4 years of a horror show. You know, where some good people were there to be a stopgap that are now not going to be there.
Right.
You know, but in answer to your direct question, I'm not surprised. I think that we're in an age where people are very angry and very upset. And I think it started with social media, but that's not the only reason. I think that people have felt that the American dream was a promissory note and that note has not been redeemed. And I think that spans ideological lines and it doesn't justify it. But listen, we can't write off half the country that's going to vote for this guy. So is that so something's amiss and it's not, oh, it's so amiss, it's all Joe Biden's fault. But something's amiss enough in this grand experiment for people to still think, right, that Donald Trump is at all remotely fit for office.
So on your podcast, Dirty Moderate, you talk about a policy. You want to have that discussion. What,
I do.
so what the hell are you talking about? Because ain't nobody out here talking about policy. What policies are you leveling up? Because Biden has gotten the big stuff done: infrastructure, debt solutions, the budget's done, as well as interest rates, et cetera, and inflation. So, I mean, there's nothing coming from my side of the aisle except
No.
Hunter Biden's
Correct.
laptop and porn
Correct.
pictures of Hunter Biden.
Yes. I actually, let me specify, policy that people who don't quite believe Trump is a threat would like to see imparted. Not all of these
Okay.
people are bad faith people. So what I mean by that is you might want to call it lack of policy. They are acting as if, right, there is a Republican Party, a party you chaired proudly and long, once long represented in the best of with party of Lincoln, as if there are debates about limited government, a strong defense, personal responsibility, as if these things apply to MAGA. To which I always push back. I don't yell at them. I don't, but in my travels, when I meet people, listen, there's a lot of unrest as someone who is a never Trump or someone who is a, it's America or Trump, you can't have both. I admit that. But I also understand that people are going to bring a lot of different experiences to the table. Not all, I don't mean people that are diehard Trumpers, but people that are disappointed. You listed off a series of accomplishments. I agree. A lot of that doesn't have a lot of meaning to people. Some of the money hasn't been spent yet. They haven't seen the results. They don't trust government. There's a great mistrust in our institutions. And I don't mean it in a nefarious way. I don't mean like in a conspiratorial, like JFK Jr.'s alive, QAnon shit. Excuse my language.
No,
I
that's
mean that
all
no, but
good.
there's people. Well, I just mean in the sense of people saying, look, I wish that they had a stronger position on the border. And I wish we did spend because of a pandemic and global supply chains. Trump, too, he sent two stimulus checks, $4.5 trillion, a lot of money to print. That has some impact on inflation. It doesn't mean it's the only reason. And that I wish that we were having those conversations, to which I then say, but the Republican Party is not a governing party.
And you
So it's
can't.
all right. So it's like we're having commun. So the other thing is, yes, we're having sort of fantasy policy discussions because I love to tease that out. But I go, who on your side? But for who? I mean, Susan Collins, or I'm just trying to think of somebody. That really is really doing policy. Mitt Romney's leaving. I thought Nikki Haley was a policy person, but she didn't get the nomination, which she was at one time. So I say that to them, and unfortunately, because they're so busy with the I have to vote R, and I grew up in a family where everybody voted D, so I understand this, except different stakes at different time those times. They think that this is just a vote for a Republican. There's no way they can pull the lever a lever for Biden. And I say, man, a lot of people like me and you, Michael Steele, and a lot of our colleagues out there who are telling you what's at stake. We are not liberals necessarily. We certainly aren't progressive. I should speak for you. I'm not a progressive. I really am like a center, probably like an Eisenhower Republican if I had to pick somewhere, if I were in a party. I'm not. But and it's sometimes they stare at me blankly. Sometimes they ponder it. I do my best to, because if you just say, well, all is lost and you have to vote for Biden, I haven't found that as effective, meaning I say that, but I want to explain what's really at stake.
So we
Not
tend
easy.
to sort of boil our politics down to, and I saw this a lot inside the GOP, and I tried to sort of move the needle on this idea that we're just one thing,
Right.
meaning that we're just all conservatives, because not all Republicans are conservatives,
No.
and not all conservatives are Republicans. You talk about and level up in the conversation the idea that there are a lot more people who've sort of hunkered down in the center right, center left space that we would affectionately know today as moderates. How has moderate, or maybe even why has moderate, become such a dirty word in politics when it was the thing that drove the politics of both parties for generations?
I mean, I have three answers for it. I mean, and we could do a whole show on it. One is the collapse of the rural urban divide within each party. Okay, the Republican, we used to have, as you know well, liberal Republicans. We had Southern Democrats, we had liberal Democrats, we had moderates. Number one, number two, obviously gerrymandering. That's been the third. Followed by, I really believe the binary that's been created of good, bad, right, wrong, not necessarily, I believe, intellectually coherent through social media. And I think that partisanship has increased, right, with purity tests and people saying that we have to believe a certain set of things, or you aren't a good Democrat, or you aren't a good Republican, you know? And I think as the demographics have changed, younger generations are through social media, they tilt more left, they tilt more progressive. So they have a different voice than they did, than I think the youth might have had in an earlier era. So I think all of that has created a perfect storm. However, the majority of countries moderate. And I'm not just saying that because I'm, they are. The majority of
Yeah,
the
so
country are moderate. I mean, that's why you see the McCain-Romney suburbs saying, wait a sec, wait, we're taking away the right to abortion? You're going bananas here. We don't want this orange Jesus in power. Whoa. Give us a standard, center-right candidate. And I think that's why Biden was so successful in 2020, because he appealed to them. He's Uncle Joe. Hard to dislike Joe Biden, and he wasn't Hillary and he wasn't polarizing and, different set of circumstances now because I think Trump is the challenger, not the incumbent, and it's always harder to run as the incumbent, I think.
But what do people not see? You just said it's hard not to like Joe Biden. He's Uncle
Hard not to
Joe.
like him. I
I mean,
know.
we've seen that.
Lindsey Graham said that in his video. Something you don't like Joe Biden, basically crying. There's something wrong with you. I mean, he should know.
So yeah, right, exactly. So what is it? Is it the poisoning of the political well to the extent that and I'm not going to put it all on MAGA and the GOP in its current iteration, because I can go back to the 1930s,
Oh,
and
sure.
those who were in their fear of what Roosevelt was starting to do in amassing great political support around this sort of New Deal policies, on the heels of depression and the precipice of World War II. Republicans were beside themselves. They, again, interesting enough, didn't have a counter offer. So, they were, they responded to the idea of packing the Supreme Court,
Supreme Court, right?
but beyond that, there wasn't too much else. So you can go back and see where it was easier to prey on people's fears politically and
Yes.
embrace hardline
Yes.
nationalism to some extent. And you look at
Yeah.
the dance that a lot of Americans had with Nazism,
Yeah.
where Henry Ford and
Absolutely.
Charles Lindbergh were
Yeah.
big time Nazis.
Father Coughlin, my whole crowd.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that whole crowd. So you can
Yeah.
see this element has been there. It has
Yeah.
been part of the pulse.
Well, and let's go back to the Civil War. I mean, it's not like we didn't have a civil, I mean, only worse than slavery itself, right? The whole institution of it was that there was a war fought to preserve it on one side. I mean, treasonous people who formed their own country, 11 of them, who were willing to burn the Union down. So it's not new. Our rancorous divides are not new. It's how they're It's how they are manifesting themselves because I think information, the democratization of information through social media, small d, I think has made history seem like it began today. Inflate, which
Well
I
put.
hate, which I
Well
hate.
put.
It's like, what is this thing? We're like, sorry, history didn't start with you. And it's like and as someone who is, look, I have a undergraduate degree in political theory and a master's in American studies. I mean, I've been doing this stuff. When I used to read political books, not scripts, when I was producing on Broadway, that's how passionate. That's why I love doing what I got to do now, and I'm so fortunate to have the second act. I don't the idea that people are so misinformed about history. It's not that it's that they're necessarily always spreading disinformation. They don't know.
They don't
When you
know.
say they don't know how much, Hamilton and Jefferson hated each other and stuff like that,
Well,
I
yeah.
mean,
Well, not only that's
they
such
might
a.
know from the musical, but
They
they
know,
don't
right?
really know. They know, but there's great books on, I just had on a great guy.
They don't. Oh man. You're just really, Adam. You're really putting your finger on a big part of the problem.
Big problem.
I had some conversations over the last couple of weeks with some folks who were torrent MAGA supporters. I mean,
Yeah.
it oozes out of the pores. So I just started asking them some questions. I was like, did you know Trump said this? Did you know Trump did that? Did you know why he's now being prosecuted for this, that? And what stunned me was not the verbal reaction to that, well, that's just not true,
Right.
and just kind of blindly saying, calling it all fake news. They legitimately, honest, I never heard that. I never heard him say that. I'm like, okay, here, 2 minutes. Let me pull it up on YouTube. Here he is saying it. Well, I didn't hear him say that. And so then all of a sudden, that shock to their system, that for the first time they're hearing something or coming into knowledge of something about this guy that in some instances they have blindly followed and
Blindly.
supported. It is almost like that watching a robot kind of process the orders and realize, wait a minute,
Right. You're like, well, I gotta change that cartridge.
I
You
gotta say
guys have
change
an
the
extra cartridge? We don't know
right. Could
what's going on. Yeah, this
anybody
guy's
know
short
this?
circuiting over here. Yeah, beep, 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 beep. No, I was gonna say though, how about the fact, and this is important too in terms of how to communicate the message, and it relates to what you're saying. People say things were better under Trump. I liked his policies. Okay, what policies?
Right.
How about this? This is it. Well, I don't know. He was better and kind of crazy and out there. I guess there were tax cut, right? But you didn't really benefit from that. Okay. Anything else? No, I just think, Biden's weak. Oh, okay. So you have nothing again. The man is so did not me blew up. I say to conservatives, I said, I'm a fiscal conservative. You're backing a guy that blew a massive hole, the federal deficit. I mean,
Right.
massive,
And supports tariffs, which are
and supports,
taxes on working people.
which, by the way, I wish that I forgive me if you've done it on your show. Why are they not only talking about the stupid tariffs he put in? Unfortunately, Biden's continued them, and I think that's been for the worst. But he wants 100% tariff now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
100%.
beyond protectionism. This is
Yeah.
crazy. This is worse than Bernie. This
Yeah.
is insane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they don't even understand. But again, he's a. It's all vengeance. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to be tough guy. I'm going to get back at. You're not getting back at anybody. You're taxing the working class, man. He doesn't care
Yeah.
about that. He
And
doesn't stand for anything.
so
It's, you know,
if you've
yeah.
got all of that then, and you see these truths that sort of creep in and out of the conversation,
Yeah.
you can begin to understand why the numbers are what they are.
Oh, yeah.
So what does a second Trump term look like to you?
So I went through, I had a guy on from Heritage Foundation. We've heard a lot about the
The Harris 2025.
2025. It's
Yeah.
900 pages. I didn't read 900 pages, but I
Right.
read 30 or 40. Somebody did a succinct summary of it. So now, granted, this particular guest, who I did like personally, I think kind of underplayed it. The what I read is a mix of what I would say kind of old style right wing kind of social conservatism, nothing that I agree with per se, even as a more small C conservative person, mixed with some really wacko crap. You know what I mean? I
Yeah.
didn't think everything I read was anything I haven't heard. I mean, I'm old enough to follow politics. I mean, some of this stuff was somebody's dream in the Reagan era or something, some of this stuff.
Right.
The problem is, and I don't know, and I don't want to minimize this. It's not that I'm worried that about so much about the federal bureaucracy. I'm worried that Trump will test the guardrails to such an extent. You know what I mean? And erode our institutions and precepts in his 4 years that we're left with a much less America. Meaning, I
Right.
don't know that the minute he gets it, you know what I mean? This isn't tanks
Yeah.
rolling in the street. You know that great book by Levitz and what I forgot their names for a second. I'm sorry, How Democracies Die. They die at the
Right,
ballot
right,
box,
right.
very, very slowly. So what I worry about is, again, he's tested that already, but just who knows what the congressional makeup will be and what they'll try to jam through and, things like using the military to round up people. I mean, there is stuff like that. So I'm not minimizing it. I'm just worried that it's going to be happening in real time as a slow burn. And we're going to wake up, right? Assuming he was even to leave office. And I know that's a big question, but
Yep.
let's just assume he does because he picks a vice president, he wants out and he's too old or something. Who knows? I mean, what is he leaving? I mean, the first iteration of MAGA to me was an incineration movement. It wasn't a conservative movement. It was all about burning down everything because they were a combination of owning the libs and they're angry at the system. It's not conservatism. They weren't conserving anything. It wasn't liberalism, you know? It was really a kind of destructive populism, you know? So that's what I worry about. And yes, there's plenty of things I worry about in that action plan from the Heritage Foundation, but that's an action plan. And Trump is an undisciplined maniac. And it could be worse.
So my view is,
I mean, the difference between me and other people, I'm not going to read all this and go into complete, hey, the more you know, but daily he shows us what danger he plays.
That's my tripwire. The Heritage Plan is the embodiment of the strategy, the plan, the idea on paper.
Yeah.
For me, a second term is not about, you know, moving the guardrails. It's removing the guardrails.
That's
it's absolutely on the ground first week, literally the first 12 hours.
Yes.
Implementing certain strategies that I think actually levels up to, dare I say it, if there are protests, as we saw, for example, in 2017, the weekend after his inauguration, where a million women came to protest the fact that, you know, a misogynist, you know, et cetera, just got elected, that will not be countenanced this time. And that there will be the use of military and police force to force into submission any dissension, any voices that are not in favor or not favored by the administration. So there, it becomes not just a slippery slope, but something that's just greased up and you're just sliding free fall. So I think that's a real concern. The other aspect of this plan, which I think is very troublesome and problematic, although it itself will have problems in implementation, is the wholesale reimagining the federal bureaucracy. Not only the departments that are eliminated, but the people whose jobs will be forfeited, sacrificed, and eliminated, and replaced to the extent that they are replaced by loyalists who will, in knowing Trump as I do, take calls directly from the man himself. Because Trump, at the end, is at the center of everything. So he's not going to call the Secretary of Transportation if he has a transportation issue that he wants addressed. He's going to call the person who's in charge of addressing that issue directly.
Yeah.
That's the kind of control he wants.
Yes.
Because he doesn't believe in the bureaucracy. He does never run his company that way.
That's right.
Everybody. That's the person who's cleaning the bathrooms report to him. You know what I'm saying?
Very much so. Very much so. No, and I think that goes with what I'm saying. That's why I said, yes, Schedule F and the elimination of the civil service, of course, is horrible. But it's not as insidious as what you're describing, which is an abuse of power at the executive branch level like we've never seen. Because we have agencies, be it the EPA or any of them, whose job it is to carry out the laws that Congress has passed, that the Supreme Court's adjudicated on, that there are all indications, or certainly strong ones, that they're going to rethink how that goes. You know, a federal department's not going to enforce said law.
Right.
That's a big difference, right? And you know, from long ago, there have always been people on the far right who've, you know, disdained any, they don't think that if the, you know, people didn't actually vote for these people who run these agencies, therefore they are not entitled to govern. That's ridiculous. I mean, I don't agree with that philosophy, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff that worries me. What's he going to erode in the Department of Energy? What's he going to do with the Interior? You know what I mean? It's not just going to be like, oh, we're going to repeal this act.
Right.
Right. To use, like you said, he's going to find that hitman, that hit person, that hatchet person to do the work that he would hire or ask somebody rather, to do in his company.
And he's the host of Dirty Moderate with Adam Epstein. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to tickle Adam's fancy with some current political excitement that we see happening around the country, from protests to boards of elections. More with Adam Epstein right after this.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele Podcast. My guest today is Adam Epstein. He is the host of Dirty Moderate with Adam Epstein. Great podcast out there for moderate for lovers of democracy and seeking shelter from the polarization and autocracy that seems to be confounding us. So you've got right now, Adam, a series of national angst around the U.S. policy in the Middle East with respect to Israel and Palestine, playing out on our college campuses across the country. The more progressive members of our communities have been made it very clear, certainly within the Democratic Party and to this president and his administration, that, you know, not only do they want a ceasefire, but they want the U.S. to stop using American dollars, resources to fund the killing of children in Palestine, among other issues that they're concerned about. How are those narratives on the left compared to narratives on the right that are focused on election integrity and efforts to control outcomes at the ballot box? These competing storylines playing out for voters out there. And which one do you think will either last the longest or have the greatest impact?
Well, you know, let me first say, I cover a lot on my show a lot. I've done many episodes on it, but I'm a lifelong Zionist. I'm a very big supporter of Israel. The Democratic Party in the last 5 or 6 years, even with people on the squad and elsewhere, kind of beginning the move away from a bipartisan consensus on what Israel should receive in terms of foreign aid. And the Iron Dome has been very worrisome to me. October 7th was horrific. And look, we can have a whole military show here. We can talk about, I'm not a military strategist, but I follow this stuff carefully. I think that it's very difficult, and it's a very difficult discussion because Hamas uses its own people as weapons and shields. There's 300 miles of tunnels built under there. It's not as simple as Israel's killing innocent people. That doesn't mean no civilians have been killed, but civilians are killed in war, and Israel is defending it. I don't believe Israel. I don't believe Hamas can stay in power. If Hamas remains in power, I know it doesn't kill every terrorist. I've heard all these arguments. Not saying do what we did in Iraq, but we have to remove a militarized Gaza. They do, I think. I just believe that. So let me say that out front. Okay, that's my position. So count me in with the pro-Israel crowd. That's where I am. Okay. Do I think Palestinians deserve a two-state? Of course. Do I think they deserve a better life? Yes, but that they can have a state when they want a state. Do you know what I mean? There's been eight tries, you know, I mean, people, that's the thing. We talk about history. What about what Bill Clinton tried to do with Ehud Barak? 93% of the West Bank, all of Gaza. And this was before Israel left Gaza. There's been a lot of history that's not been discussed here. And you can listen. I don't think Bibi Netanyahu's a great guy. I'm not saying that, but I also am more concerned about a barbaric terrorist entity than I am a right-wing Israeli government. That's where I stand. As it relates to the campus protests, the majority of America supports Israel, thinks they have a right to exist in every way. And unfortunately, I think they see campus, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I think the way it's playing out is, I think the center, people who would like, who actually have supported Biden being talking to Israel, see a lack of leadership and a weakness here and a kind of weird accommodation of these campus protests, which I don't think are hitting in the way the left thinks they are. I don't think it's because
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't. And I also, yes, I admit to being a Zionist. I'm not religious, but I'm sorry. The civil rights protests and protests in the Vietnam War are not the same thing as chanting.
This is not 1968, baby.
Yeah, and it's in intifada on a campus. You know, it's one thing if all of these protests, which
Sorry.
by the way, many of which, not encampments, but remember, protests started October 8th. It's one thing if from the get-go, everybody said, we want a safe and secure Israel, but we want BBF. That's not what people say,
Right.
right? You're hearing it go to a place. That doesn't mean everybody who's at these encampments is necessarily anti-Semitic or hates Jews, obviously. But I think there's the movement itself comes from a large amount of academic rot. You know, I studied some of the stuff I know, you know,
Yeah.
of just being indoctrinating a lot of philosophies that create, I think, myths about colonialism and myths about power and race that I think are, for me, are just untrue and are not intellectually coherent. To the point about your other question about election integrity, I think those are such important things that do not get the news. I mean,
Yeah.
I've done election
Yeah.
security on my show. It's not a sexy subject, but it's so important. Like when we know how safe the 2020 election was, given that, by the way, Donald Trump, back to him, how can we forget him, has not conceded the 2020 election. How about
No,
that? I mean, we still talk. This is insane. So I'm
well.
saying when we talk about that, it's such an important issue. But to people in the middle, right, that person, I speak to, you know, again, everything's anecdotal to the extent, unless you poll people. Oh, God, I'm so worried about abortion. Oh, I hate MAGA. But man, this is getting crazy on the campuses. These are like Hamas supporters now. And a lot of them are, not everybody. And it's just, it's not registering. Social media is having a backfire on that because plenty of people in the middle, you know, don't like it. And don't forget the majority of Americans, many of whom are religious Christians, but not all, they support Israel. But, you know, there's no
Right.
like affection for, you know, a protest movement against Israel, even in its excesses. I'm not saying that there isn't a turn in popularity, but overwhelmingly, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think there is either, and which is why these two issues really are kind of placeholders for other issues that sort of fall within their space and really kind of collectively. So on the one side, you'd have something like abortion. And on the other side, the electoral side question, you'd have, you know, something along the lines of, you know, what we see talked about in the Heritage 2025 plan,
right,
or a presidential nominee saying he wants to be a dictator, really kind of become placeholders for sort of the domestic side of the narrative for voters,
yeah,
and the democracy side of the narrative for voters. And the question becomes, which one at the end of the day prevails? In 18 and 22, we could make the case, well, excuse me, 20 and 22, we could make the case that the democracy side prevailed. Why you didn't have a blue wave, because at the end of the day, you had issues about individual rights for women that were being stripped away constitutionally by the Dobbs decision. So it was abortion, but more fundamentally was this right was ours for 50 years, a right that my daughter and my granddaughter will no longer enjoy. So it's interesting how these questions and these issues are sort of, it's like watching something gravitate to a particular space. Are you going to have more in this space over here or more in that space over there? And where do the voters align themselves ultimately?
I've always said, Michael, you should share the Republican Party. I've always said, because I've never had a taste, still don't, for big government invading people's lives, especially their personal lives.
Yep.
I have devoutly approached, I'm a sex, drugs, and rock and roll libertarian in that way. Okay. First of all, I'm gay. So I obviously support gay rights, but I didn't have to be gay to support gay rights.
Right.
Gay marriage, reproductive rights. These are okay. You know what I mean? All this stuff, the decriminalization of marijuana, get the government out of this. Okay. Because I will argue the government's too big economically too, but I can't then say to you, well, it should do all this stuff. You know, stop telling parents who have teenagers who are questioning their gender identity. That's not your business. Okay.
Right.
It's just not your business. So all of which is to say, I can't blame women for seeing something stripped away that shouldn't have been stripped away in a terrible Supreme Court decision.
Right.
You know, the question then becomes, though, and I still think this is true, and I say, so if the Republican Party were truly fiscally conservative, I don't mean passing all the infrastructure things of the Democrats. I mean, a fiscally conservative party that really cut taxes, theoretically paid for them, you know, and combine that with a a limited government, a social tolerance, cultural tolerance, I think they would be sweeping elections left and right. But they've never been that. We don't have that party.
We don't have that. Yeah.
We don't have that. I know people
we
say
don't.
It's the Democrat. No, it's not the Democrats. The Democrats believe, have a faith in government I don't have, because I don't think human nature can be socially engineered. That's a whole separate debate. So I can't, you know, every passing law after law might be an accomplishment. That doesn't ring, what's the word? Doesn't get me going that much.
Right.
Because I'm skeptical of it. But you better believe I'm skeptical, right, of MAGA, right? I don't know if it's Rick Wilson called them big government conservatives. And DeSantis, all they do is use the state to punish people.
That's
with
it.
The people they disagree with, which is completely antithetical to the whole idea of what the party was birthed for, the modern Republican Party. So that's bullshit, too.
Well,
you know?
it goes to the heart of...
And I attack them all the time. You know, if people... I get called the left-winger or right-winger, depends on the day.
Right, right, exactly.
As a moderate, you know.
Exactly.
Like,
in my space, they just called me a rhino. So there it
right,
is.
Right, I mean, a rhino, right, I know. That goes
so you're kind of a lino.
I'm a lino, right.
But Adam, the interesting thing is, particularly on this sort of libertarian part of the Republican narrative, I mean, that's always been sort of what one of the core anchors of who we were, because we did see a limited role for government, and it had no place in the decision making of a woman or a man or a family or a community. And to the extent that it touched on education, which is why education is a local matter, or healthcare, which is that something between you and your doctor, you know, how you raise your children. And yet on this issue of abortion, for example, we've turned the table where we've now become the big government Republicans who are telling people the government says is dictating the terms of when you or if you or are able to have a child, IVF, or have an abortion, yes or no. I mean, these are questions. And the thing about it that's so frustrating is that we tend to paint with such a broad brush and say that, well, all these abortions, well, abortions were on the decline.
Yep.
The country had settled, had come to a settled space on this issue. And actually, the pro-life argument was catching on with people saying,
I had David French on my show, okay, who you I'm sure you know very well.
I know David well.
He gave the most eloquent explanation. I am devoutly pro-choice. He gave the most eloquent explanation of the meaning of why he's pro-life.
Yep.
But he's not punitive. So in other words, I just want less abortions. I believe it's murder.
Right.
I want it to be. Many people of good faith believe that. The problem then becomes people who go, because the natural question is, okay, you went out, and this was asked for years. Chris Matthews famously asked Trump this. This goes back in the day we used to debate abortion. Okay, who goes to jail, the woman or the doctor? Because that's what ends up happening in the conversation, which makes me, whoa, I'm like, this is un-American crap. I'm pro-choice, as I said, but even if I weren't, why is the government controlling a woman's uterus? What are you talking about? The doctor's going to start jailing people? This is insane.
Right.
And so stuff is a gift to the Democrats. And I think the one thing you've seen, look at all the red states, seven of them that have codified abortion rights, from Ohio to Kansas to Montana, because this is a political loser for Republicans. That doesn't mean that everybody who's pro-life is a bad person. As
That's
I was saying,
right.
You know, it's not an either or. Good conscience, good faith, people have religious reasons. But if you're then going to say, yes, but I'm going to put your daughter in jail. Okay, well then that matter of conscience is no longer that. It becomes a punitive public policy. I actually think violates the Establishment Clause, but that's another argument.
So I just to prove the point.
Yeah,
I had a conversation with one of my hothead conservative friends, and who was all about. I mean, he was an absolutist on the issue.
Right.
Absolute. Absolute ban on abortion. No exceptions for rape, life of the mother, or incest. And I looked at him. I said, I completely understand your position, but I do have one question for you. So when your 14-year-old daughter is raped by a Black man, what are you going to do then? Are you buying Pampers? Are you going to be the happy grandpa?
He didn't know how to handle that.
Are you going to be the happy grandpa who looks at that child every day and who's now,
I know
my complexion?
I know.
What and oh, we won't even do we need to talk about the 9 months your daughter's carrying that child and what that says, what she's saying, what's saying to her, being said to her in her neighborhood by her friends and fa all of this other stuff that you're not taking into consideration. And of course he got mad at me and walked away.
Right.
But that's the reality, and that's the reality of a lot of women and young girls out there that find themselves in unfortunate situations, and there is no one there for them because of that reaction. They just walk away. You deal with it.
I
Your
think
problem.
I
But it's the
think
problem you've created for me, in one sense,
yeah.
by saying I have no options under the Constitution or the law
Right.
to consider anything else, and you're forcing my hand now. And I say this as someone who is pro-life and
Right.
who has advocated for life
Yes.
and pro-life because I was adopted. So I understand
Right. And
what
I
choice
understand your, but
means.
I understand your position.
Right,
That's what
right.
I do on my podcast. I mean, that's the whole, everyone you disagree with is not your enemy. Okay. And the
Right,
other thing is to the Joe
exactly.
Biden, the larger print, back to the presidential point, the negative thing. Not to take us too off topic, but it's all on topic, I think.
Right.
Trump broke the left and the Democratic resistance in the worst way because he made things so corrosive and crazy. To sometimes you got back to the polls is that they sometimes lose their bearings. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Everybody then is now you're on the red team and you're on the blue team. And if you're not
Right.
on that team, you're out. You know what I mean? And I remember back when I was still a Democrat, and I wasn't on my podcast yet, but I'd be posting stuff. And if I posted stuff that seemed just buck the party line, like 2 likes, you know, nobody know what to do with it. It weren't so much attacking me. People's tribalism kicks in, you know. And my point in saying this is, why do we have to agree? I don't agree with Joe Biden a lot of stuff, but I'm gonna vote for him. But
Right,
what's that?
right.
What happened to the? I grew up in a Democratic house. My grandparents were more political than my parents in the age of Reagan. We didn't sit around the dinner table every night and argue about, sorry, blast Reagan and say our life was ruined about it. Trump, of course, is Ronald Reagan. But my point is, why can't people go to the polls and say, look, I don't agree with, you know, if I'd been in the legislature, I was for the infrastructure bill and CHIPS and Science. I'm not for the Anti-Inflation Act. I think some of the COVID spending's too much. I would have done things differently on the border. I have policy differences.
Right.
But Liz Cheney said we can live through bad policy. We can't live through Trump 2.0. Why is this, you know, the questions we're asking ourselves, but why do you have to agree with your president? I think Trump, he was a symptom of that. We were headed there, but it's an insane conversation that you have to sign on to all these things, or otherwise you can't vote for the person, right?
So I asked you and before we went to break,
Yeah.
what was your worst fear about Trump? What's your worst fear about a Biden reelect?
My worst fear about, well, my here's the truthful answer. I don't have a problem with Kamala Harris. I'm not on the hater team. Do I think she should be president of the United States if he dies? I'm not so sure. I'm not convinced. What I don't understand, and I really want to like her, is why every interview 3.5 years is so clumsy and inartful. I just don't get what's going on there. I maybe someone can send me the vice president of the stage. You got a team. You know you're sitting down with Lester Holt, Michael Steele, whatever. You're just not ready. I mean, you're just not ready. How are you not ready? You got, oh, what am I doing? I have Leslie Stahl tonight. I didn't read my briefing book. I'm rooting for her. I just don't get. I
You just
still, I
don't
think
get
there's.
it.
I don't get it. And I understand what I think. Look, of course, there's racism and sexism there, but I think there's
Right.
other people that go, "What's going on?" But that's not the primary thing. I just say that I am so uncomfortable with the democratic movement toward certain kind of cultural leftism, especially on Israel and other issues. It makes me nervous. And I think Biden is the last of a generation. Biden, my mentor, Bob Graham, who just died there, Biden, even as a Zionist, these days are over. And there's a new generation coming in. And who's in the administration? Now, granted, they're not overthrowing the government, they're not threatening democracy.
Right.
These are policy differences. But I do worry about who's in charge. I don't mean that he's senile. I don't mean that. I just mean who's coming down the pike,
Right. What's the
you
next
know?
generation that's going to
Yeah.
pick up the mantle and move forward?
I'm
Right.
also not convinced by foreign policy. I mean, I'm certainly behind him on Ukraine, but it's like, look, Iran's the thing. If you don't deal with Iran, if you appease Iran and fund Iran, they're the root of all this. And you have
Right.
to deal with it. I don't want to go to war with Iran, but I'm saying you've got to live in the real world with that. And I don't see a policy on that. So there are things, none, again, because I've always had the thing in my head, but what about Trump? Yeah, Trump is manifestly unfit. He's a lowlife. I know. But I'm talking about if Biden got in, what's the policy? You know, I voted for Obama twice, for example, but I thought his second term in foreign policy really, really shat the bed. And we're paying for some of those mistakes. I didn't know that at the time. I rather liked Mitt Romney. I would have voted for him. But it turned out to be prophetic. I just want to know what the policies are. It, again, in answer to your question, if we are Trump's defeated, you know, what is Biden going to do? I mean, maybe it's more of the same. I don't know. One would think several years after the pandemic, right, the inflation rates would continue to come down and maybe there'd be better job creation, although I guess that's been good, I guess.
Right.
You know, I'm not somebody who wants to throw numbers at people if they tell me they're struggling. I just don't find that, you know, oh, things are great. Well, maybe it's not great for them. That doesn't mean they're voting for Trump, but I understand if somebody says, you know, what I don't understand is when you're talking to educated people of a certain demographic and they're like, yeah, I just got to, you got to get Trump back. This guy's weak. It's like, no one's weaker than Trump. Nobody's weaker than Trump. He's the most childish, insecure, narcissistic jerk, dirtbag. There's nobody weaker. That's what makes me, by the way, with the Kim Jong-un, I'm sure you've said this, but if you haven't used it, the Kim Jong-un and the love letters and Putin.
Right.
Yeah, of course he seems strong on the stage. Those guys knew how to play him like a fiddle.
Oh, they did.
They knew it was, that's the thing. It's not foreign policy genius. He loves him because all you have to say is, Trump, you're great. Michael, if you and I went on tomorrow, went to the to his Mar-a-Lago and told him he's great. He's, oh, Michael Steele's the greatest, the best podcast. Adam Epstein's are great. He's a nothing. He's just he's a Trumpist.
That is so true.
I hate the whole like Biden is weak thing. I mean,
of all the criticism between you and myself, if we were to come out and say, you know, at the end of the day, I look at Trump, he's the best thing for the country right now. He would say, yeah, he wasn't with me before, but he's with me now. And he's
say, I'm gonna make
him,
he'd be great at the RNC. Great guy, great guy. Right, worked against Obama, whatever he's come up with, whatever the hell he was, you know, that's BS. But at the same time, the thing that Dirty Moderate we do is I understand that only caring about democracy can feel like a luxury. It's an essential thing to care about, primary. But I get it. If somebody says, look, I can't afford to care about that, I got to vote. Then it's a harder sell. Even if you say Trump doesn't offer anything, which I always say, what's he going to do for inflation? I mean, well, what's he going to do? Right. You told me presidents, you know, you're so mad about gas prices, but presidents don't really control gas prices. So what? Here we let go again, go through the list of policies. What's he doing? We know he's going to do a tariff. We know he might round people up. Sounds great, right? I mean, what's he doing?
Right, right.
Like, that's the stuff that
I always say. So, yeah, you don't have a problem with it rounding people up. What happens when he rounds up someone you know and love?
That's it.
Then what you going to do? What you going to say that, oh, they should go? Are you really going? You really, that's going to be your position? And that's the truth here. I mean, people just don't want to confront the next part of it.
No.
You know, there's like, they want to stop at, you know, abortion, you know, bans across the board. Okay, so what happens when your spouse, your wife, your daughter is in a horrible situation and you have an absolute ban position? What's your view now? Oh, so this is the exception, just the one exception you're going to make? So it really does play out for everybody. It ultimately will play out for everybody because nothing, as I can tell you, assure you, in life and certainly not in politics is absolute. There's just not, well, that's the end of it. There's always a moment where you have to turn the page and you have to reconcile yourself to what you find on that page when you turn it.
Well, it's 100%. And on every issue, and I think about the COVID stimulus bills, right? By the time we kept, you know, obviously we're in a, major pandemic. You know, did I love the sound of pumping this amount of money, you know, bailing out upper class restaurateurs?
Right.
A lot of stuff was, but man, 22% unemployment and people are hungry and what are you going to do? I mean, and I know a lot of people voted against it, but see, that's where I would have said, look, I got to hold my nose here. What do? You tell people that
government's
no got to
stimulate.
You're going to close the economy and no one can work and you can't have both ways. You either got to subsidize people or you got to keep the economy open. And we weren't doing that. So how could you not be for a lifeline? That's what I'm saying. There's a real cost to that. That lifeline didn't go through. That would have hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
As hundreds of thousands were dying already, eventually more than a million. But so Right. It's what you're saying is there is a pragmatic end to things that people don't consider because it's very abstract. Oh, I'm against this.
Right.
Okay. All right. Close the border. Oh, okay. What do we do now? Well, we don't want anybody here. Okay. Well, who's doing all the jobs that you won't do? Right. Let's start with that. That's true. Who's in the construction business?
So when you're paying $7 for an orange,
yeah,
you understand why you're paying $7 for an orange because there's nobody there.
And the people that say this to me, you know, and I could say this, they are mainly white. I'm like, your white rich ass son isn't doing that job. Your teenager, he doesn't do anything.
No.
Well, what does he do? You don't make a guy work. He doesn't have a job. You bought him a new car. What's he do? I can tell you this. This guy's dreaming about American Idol and TikTok videos. He's not going to go cut somebody's lawn. He's going to cut your lawn.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Let's have a real conversation. So sometimes you have to, you know this, politics is a retail business, you know, and I feel like as in the media, those of us that do it this way, we can engage and say, okay, can we just talk real? Yeah. That's why I love you and your show. You know, it's like,
I appreciate it, man.
No, have a real conversation. I mean, you know, we can disagree, but let's not talk in concentric circles of nonsense.
Right, right. and look, let's be honest about the facts and the truth that's out there. And some of it, you know, is not a good shade for Biden, and some of it's not a good shade for Republicans. But if you're not honest about that, then you are fundamentally providing a disservice to discourse. And I think at the core of it, Adam, that's one of the more problematic breakdowns, is that we just stop talking to each other because we fundamentally don't like what we're about to hear.
And we can't do that. I mean, that's the other thing. I have friends in my life right now. They're Trump voters. They are not MAGA. Okay,
right.
That's the other thing. They don't wear red hats.
And right.
We disagree. You know, they don't like his behavior, blah, blah, blah. They like him. I said, look, to me, you can't separate that. But okay, put it aside. But these are some very good people. And you know what? They're not even that conservative.
Yeah.
Not in a doctrinaire way.
Not in a doctrinaire way.
You know, some of them.
But then again, neither was Trump. So I guess it works.
He doesn't stand. Well, he was a Democrat. But what I mean is, it's interesting. Is these are some of these people. I love these people very much. And I know they're not bad people. I'm not going to go to a dinner table and not be friends. That, you know, that's the thing. We can't. Look, he got 46% of the vote roughly the first time, second time again. I can't write off half the country. I mean, I wish that I can't believe he got, you know, 74 million votes the second time, but he did after all that. So, you know,
that says a lot more about where the country is
than
it actually does about Trump.
I agree. And where do we go from there? And what does that mean?
Right.
And, you know, what does it look like? You know, where does that agitation, that unrest, how do you filter that out? Does maybe that's still there and takes a different form?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll pick up this conversation when I come to your podcast.
Yes, I want you on. I know. We're getting you on. I'm excited. So we'll get you on as soon as we can. But we have everybody you know on. I have everybody on.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, there's an amazing book out right now, which came out at the end of 2022 about Reagan, The Peacemaker. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have heard about
William
that.
Inboden. Wow.
I have not read it yet. Yeah.
Great. Great. He was on. And tomorrow I have Luke Nichter, speaking of 1968, the year that changed politics, another good one.
Oh, wow.
I love all this. Such good stuff. You know, really good. Those are people that, you know, I don't know if they fit on your TV show, but they would be great on your podcast.
Super.
And it's such a great book, and you'll love, he really reappraises. He was raised a Democrat. You know, Reagan really did change the world stage for the better.
Yep.
But it's not uncritical. It's not like it's like Reagan the hero. But, you know, a lot of that, you know, leadership really made a difference, and we don't have that.
We are woefully, below the levels there.
We just don't have that, you know. And I really meant what I said. Like, Obama was really disappointing a lot of ways. It's not that I like him. I hear
that a lot, even from Democrats now.
Do they say that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And
they realize, as one put it to me, they realize he really was not ready for prime time, which I thought was interesting. Which,
you know, and I had a liberal, I had a liberal person say, but don't get me started on white progressives. And they said, well, I'm really glad that you didn't vote for Romney a second time, because you would have been doing the racist thing by voting out a black president. I said, what I would like you to do is what I said to him, is to speak to black people, and why don't you run that by them? Because I don't think that's for you to say,
right?
Or for you to answer. That's what I always say. That's what I always say. I'm like, who are you, the arbiter? I'm sorry. You have
Right.
zero. You also have zero black friends, this person.
Right.
Not one. Not one. But they speak for the community. And I don't like that. It's like,
Yeah.
I'm like, that's racist to vote for. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It's like, this is where we are now in a culture. You can't, it's nothing to expect.
Exactly. It makes your head spin. It makes
You
your head
know,
absolutely
and
spin.
here's the thing. I really liked Mitt Romney. I really liked John McCain. I was never going to do Sarah Palin. That was my
Yeah,
problem.
no,
But
that's
I did like John
yeah, McCain would have been an interesting choice. In fact, I often think back if the Romney people had better prepared for the moment
Yeah.
in 2012, a lot of things would be very different today if Romney had
Think of
won the
that.
election in
Think if
12.
Romney had won, maybe there'd be no Trump.
There wouldn't have been. There wouldn't have been.
I would trade it if we could go back.
Absolutely wouldn't have been.
You know, I would, if that was it, I know how painful I would be like, hey, we got Obama for a first term where I think he was arguably more
And then
successful.
in
Mitt
20,
comes in. Mitt was right on all that. My God, I
I
was
was going to
just
say on
watching the thing.
2014, Crimea, Russia would have had the U.S. foot up its ass
Yeah.
with
You
Romney
know,
in
when
there because
Obama said, you know, you have your Cold War thinking and Russia's nothing. And also Romney said Iran is the real threat and they're sponsoring terrorism. It's going to come home to roost in the middle
that's
of.
it.
He nailed it. Watch this debate. And that's the thing. You know, at the time, I guess I was plugged in, but I guess I was just so on Obama's team. And I think Obama really was condescending to him. And
Yeah,
it
he
was
was very
really a
condescending.
bad look. Now that
Yeah.
you look at it, we were
Yeah.
the 80s, once
It
your
was
Cold War thinking
very,
back. And it's
very
like,
condescending, and he was wrong. He
and
was
he was
just flat
wrong.
out wrong.
Yeah. Do you know him at all? Did you ever know him personally?
Obama?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Obama's not
You
very
were on the
easy.
other side anyway. So
Yeah,
you were
he,
right.
I tried to get people to understand that he is far more partisan than his public persona.
Oh,
He
yeah,
is
for sure.
not I tried on number because I was one point the only black elected official in the country, state or federal, until he got elected. And I reached out to him and got the cold shoulder, was ultimately told that my office, the office of the lieutenant governor, was formally told that that he didn't see any reason for the two of us to ever meet. Hand to God.
I believe it. I isn't that it, that is like, yeah, he's partisan. He's also, he didn't govern this way, but he's also far more leftist than he lets on.
He's far more less leftist,
He
and
is.
he's far more full of himself and his sense of purpose slash history, which blinds him to how he could have gone down in history as not just an okay president, but possibly a great one, particularly given the political environment he was in. But he just could not. He just couldn't navigate beyond the personal.
Yeah.
For him, it was all very personal. And it's a little bit of, dick measuring
Of
up
course.
against other people. And I'm like, dude,
I know.
you're two-term state senator. Get over yourself. So,
Well,
but
that's
anyway.
right. No, and I think that's right. The thing I want to talk to you on the podcast about the Republican Party and the history of it, and really interesting. I really wanted to, you know, really want to like do a deep dive if we could about what it was like to be African American and chair of the party. I'm really
Oh,
fascinated
I
by
got stories.
No, I mean, it's an interesting thing because, you know, you wonder, you know, and only you can speak to is your experience, you know, how much of the of that, you know, animus was based in race or was all
Oh,
of it?
yeah,
I mean,
a lot of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it. A lot of
yeah.
it sort of, and it would manifest itself in a number of different ways that I learned to decode over my, many years of party activism
But you
and
were a Republican all the years before. Was it kinder, gentler in those years? Probably, right?
Yeah, it made a difference who was kind of talking at the center of the microphone. George Bush 41
Yeah, he's a good
brought
guy,
about a
wasn't he?
very different vibe inside the party
He was a good man, I think.
than even Reagan or Bush 43 in
I
some
thought Bush
respects.
43 was pretty, no, it was pretty good,
No,
I thought.
he was. No, he no, I'm just saying, but it was a different
Yeah,
kind, different
different kind
emphasis.
of. Yes. Well, yes, because 41 and four, Gerald Ford are the two real last kind of Episcopalian, moderate Republicans, really, you know, that kind of spurned that, I think.
Right. No, I so it's a very different thing. But yeah, now I'd be glad to get into all of that. It's
You
very
know, in Luke Nichter's book,
instructive.
1968, I knew a lot about this because I'm obsessed with Richard Nixon. You know, Richard Nixon was a true NAACP civil rights Lincoln Republican.
Yeah.
He sold it all out, but
Yeah.
that's actually who he was. He was
Yeah.
to the left of Kennedy. He would then those days, Daddy King endorsed him in
Well,
those
he created
days.
affirmative action.
Yes, but nobody was a civil right. He really was. He was. I mean, he was a kind of intro. You know that era. You know, there's no Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act without the Republicans. You
Yeah,
know.
that's
So
absolutely right.
it's, and that's,
Absolutely right.
I'm sorry that that changed, you know,
Yeah.
because we have no, you know, both parties are
Well,
screwed.
the you know, when you throw the oars out and you start drilling holes in the boat, progress is suddenly your enemy.
Yeah, and the truth is, the country, if you look at the results of the Democratic Party, you know, since the Civil Rights Act, they've never, the South never voted again
Yeah.
for a Democrat. Really,
Yeah.
basically,
Yeah.
Bill Clinton was the only one that got to
Well,
even.
Bubba went back
But Bill
home
was,
with Bill Clinton
but
in
Bill was
92.
Bill. But Bill
Yeah.
could unite as he did in 96 too.
But
He
by
could unite the
96, they were
country.
gone.
They were
96, by
gone.
96, they were gone. They did the
Right.
4-year thing and they realized, we're not buying this DLC crap. And
No.
they stayed home until Trump awakened them and brought them off their couches to the back to the polls.
Until Trump. Right. Right. That's why Gore didn't get it. He didn't win the
That's it.
South. And
That's it.
Kerry was a goner.
Yep.
And but look how big Obama won among northern whites. Look at Iowa and Wisconsin. I
Yeah.
mean, jeez, he
Yeah.
blew it out of the water, you
Yeah.
know. And
Yeah.
then you got all those counties that's flipped to Trump 4 years later. Now, is that a backlash, as Bill Maher would say? Or
Yeah.
is that just, you know, the
Yeah.
promissory note thing I told you? I don't
Yeah.
know. I think it's
Yeah.
a lot of things at once, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I
So
think so. Yeah. No, I think, I mean, there are a lot of features of that and a lot of things that feed into how voters behaved with Obama on the ballot.
I loved your show, by the way, with Andrew Gillum and Tiffany, and they were really cornering you. And you were great. You're like, guys, you know, it's like every mistake, not mistake, everything you ever did is like held
Right.
to a thing. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, look, in reality, any group, I don't care if you're gay, whatever, both parties should have to fight for the votes of everybody.
Absolutely.
I mean, isn't it better for Black America to have two parties? Because I mean, what the hell's good is that?
Yeah,
I mean,
every
you know,
day.
that you're the Democrats, what the hell are they doing? I mean,
Yeah.
you know, and you see it. I don't know if it's real, but my God, you see all the mostly Black men on TikTok. They're like Trump. They don't like Biden.
Yeah,
They
they
like,
well,
this
it,
is who,
but you know,
is
but
that
Trump,
real, or is that performance art?
it's a lot of his performance
Yeah.
because, as I like to point out, yeah, they do that on TikTok, and then when they turn the camera off, their wife throws a book at them.
Well, but let me say this, and I've
Yeah.
talked to Mike Madrid about this, though, with working class Latino men. This election at the margins, right, is what I'm so worried about. Yeah, of course, Trump's not winning the black vote, but the question is, if he only wins 86% and not 92%, he might have a problem.
Well, but Trump is not getting more than he got the last time, and which
No,
was
good.
around 10 to 11% of the black vote. And I will be surprised at this stage if it's that high. I think it's more single digits. The problem is more on the Hispanic side, where they tend to lean a little bit more into the machismo.
Yeah.
But again, keeping in mind, black men, Hispanic men aren't noted for their voting prowess. So
No.
they're not burning up the ballot box with their votes per se. And whereas the female Hispanic and African American are
Oh,
much
yeah.
more inclined to go vote, irrespective of how they vote, they are inclined to go vote. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not Trump and his team can actually, you know, if those sneakers and promises to give them unfiltered cigarettes is enough to get them to the polls.
Hard. That's the kind of a guy like Trump. It's hard to believe, right? That because to me, it's son of a George Wallace in a way, a different
Right.
kind. And
Right.
how do you go in there? You know what I mean?
Right.
And say like this, that his racism doesn't bother you. It's so overt. It's not like it's a hidden. That's the thing I don't
Well, they're
understand.
lying to themselves. And you know, no one,
It's not
no
like
one.
a coy, like, oh, I wasn't welcome at the country club. I'm a Jew. You know, it's not kind of that. This guy's out there, you know. You know where he
Well, some
stands.
of it, I mean, to be honest, some of the folks that I've talked to and run into, you can sense they have sort of a white view of their own community, which is really weird. In
What do you
other
mean, an
words,
internalized like disdain
yeah,
for
they so
themselves?
they view young black men the way white people view young black men,
Oh,
and
I
they're
see.
black. So you just kind of you there is a whole lot of that,
A lot
which
of that. How
yeah.
about this guy, Byron Donalds? This guy
Well,
that
he's an
he's pretty,
example of that.
he's
He's
formidable though, politically. He looks like
no,
he's
he's
got
not.
chops. No.
No, he's not. Well,
No.
formidable. Where's his base of support? It's not in the black
No,
community.
not in terms of base. I mean, in his presentation is
Oh
very
yeah. Well,
compelling.
you
He's
know,
got a slick.
as they like to say, he's articulate. So.
I mean, just he when I heard him on an interview, I mean, he was, I don't know about articulate, he just was great. But that was Joe Biden said Barack was articulate. Remember
Yeah,
that?
well, exactly. No, but you know, Byron's good at what he does. He came into the House and then suddenly made the right turn towards MAGA because that was the pathway
That's where the
to
right.
get them to do to pat him on the head
And
and pretend they're
the
going to make
grift
him
is
leader.
real, and the
Yeah, the
grift is
grift is
real. But
real.
there's nobody worse to me. Now, maybe he wasn't at a time, but just because he's so pathetic than Tim Scott, it's so pathetic.
Well, we'll get into all of
Well,
that when we
I know,
talk, I
but what
think.
is such a shame, a guy like that? What's the matter with him? I mean,
Yeah,
he wants to be. Do
yeah.
you think he'll be the running mate, Tim Scott? No.
Trump is picking a woman.
Who is it? What
That's where
woman?
his problem is.
But he baby puppy killer is not getting the job, so
No.
who's he gonna pick?
It's always been Elise Stefanik, I think.
She's good.
It's always been
I mean,
Elise.
she's effective. I'm not good is the wrong
And
word.
that's why. And she will do whatever Trump wants her to do.
Not Tulsi? No.
No. Tulsi gets him nothing. She's a former Democrat, doesn't. Now you got two former Democrats running under the Republican nomination. Well, come on.
You're right.
I
Yeah.
mean, how
Well,
if
he's
you
just, well, he's kind of changed the rules a little bit. That's all. It's not,
he's what?
he's kind of changed the rules, Trump. He's kind of a scrambler in that sense.
Yeah, he has, but at the end of the day, he still can be stung by being a Democrat. And for
6 months
someone
ago,
like
I said
Tulsi doesn't fit.
Stefanik, and I really believed it was Kristi Noem, but who knew she threw her dog in a gravel pit?
I know.
I
I
mean,
mean, Christie. Yeah, right.
I
Christie grew, but I never bought the Christie line. I mean, I like Christie from the standpoint. Yes, yeah, she's a governor and all of that, but I think at the end of the day,
she gets him nothing really,
she
right?
gets him. She absolutely gets him nothing now. And so the reality for him is who's going to put the Band-Aid on my Achilles heel, which is abortion.
Right. That's true.
Scott doesn't do that.
No.
Right-wing Christian sitting up
No.
there talking. Yeah, he's not going to do that.
No.
Tim
No.
Scott's not going to take a softer tone on abortion. Mike
I.
Pence, if Mike Pence wouldn't, Tim Scott's not going to. So, but Elise Stefanik will lie and say whatever you need her to
Well,
say.
she was a moderate originally, wasn't she?
That's what she was. But maybe she's showing us who she really was. I don't know.
Well, but to your point, it's
Anyway.
interesting. We do one last thing. She will be, as I'm talking to you about, depends on the trajectory of these campus protests. She's great. She's been great about anti-Semitism, and I know she uses it, but she's been great with it.
Yeah, no, she's
Going
a
after the
great
campuses, she'll
gentleman.
be a great attack dog on that. And
That's
I have
it.
to tell you, she'll be tough with Kamala. That
She'll
won't
be
be a
very tight. I think that debate will be one that everyone will watch. You, in fact, don't even have to do a debate between her, between Trump and Biden. Just do
Ooh.
that.
Yeah. Do you agree with what I said about Kamala? I just don't get it.
Yeah, there's a lot there
But
to
it's not
unpack with
hate. It's
Kamala.
not dislike. I just don't understand. I don't get it.
Yeah, she got defined the wrong way coming out of the gate and has not been able to recover from that. And the Democrats have not helped her cause. I mean, in fact, they did more damage to her than Republicans did. So, they put too much on her plate, didn't give her, sight lines of authority that would lend itself to success. And then all of a sudden, when the incoming started to rain down on her, she had no shield. And she got pummeled. And politically. And so, now everyone's looking at it go, oh my God. And that's from Democrats. Republicans, we'll say what we're going to say, but Democrats have been the ones who've lampooned the opportunity for her to be the next president, not Republicans. They're the quickest and the first out of the box to say it, So,
Wow.
but
I know we could
the
talk
reality of it
forever.
is he put her on the ticket and there was nothing they could do
What
about
could do
it. They're
about it?
stuck with her and they
Right.
can't take her off no
No,
matter what they
no.
feel about anybody else. She will be the nominee because she will be the vice president should they win election because
That's
she's
it.
not going anywhere. She's not going anywhere. You're
We
not
can
taking
talk.
the first black woman off the ticket.
No, 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 no.
It's not
Your
doing
base
that.
is black women. I mean, you got
Yep,
what
your
you
base is
know.
black women. You are not doing that. So,
Nope.
Adam, thank you,
No.
man. I really appreciate you for coming
Thanks, Mike.
by. I
Always.
look forward to joining you over there at Dirty Moderate, man.
Yep.
I get to
You're
hang out.
anytime. We want you on. I'm excited. Excited.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Again, Adam is a great guy out there. He's got a great podcast. Check it out, Dirty Moderate with Adam Epstein. Just for politically moderate podcast for lovers of democracy.
At Twitter too, at Dirty Moderate on Twitter. Thank you.
At Dirty
Yeah.
Moderate on Twitter, and we really appreciate you coming on and spending a little dirty time with us. So
My
keep
pleasure, Mike. Keep it
it
real, keep it dirty.
real, keep it dirty. Until next time, folks, that's exactly what we're going to do. We want you to do the same thing. Love it when you do that download. You know how it makes me feel all yummy inside. Appreciate you when you do that. Spring is in the air, summer's around the corner. Gonna be a lot of good things out there, but keep in mind the most important thing is what you do as a citizen as we get ready for the November elections. Yes, I'm going to be preaching it for the next 6 months as if the election is this Tuesday, every Tuesday until it actually is. Keep that in mind. Stay focused on the prize called democracy. Until next time, God bless.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.